Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here Tuesday morning, November the 11th, 2025. 11-11-25. Isn't that Make-A-Wish? At 11-11, you're supposed to make a wish. I think I heard that somewhere. So maybe 11-11-25. Make-A-Wish today, 16 minutes past the hour. We have a guest on the line we're going to turn to here momentarily, a call-in already. But I do want to say this before we get into last night's city council meeting. Something rather momentous happened last night. You might have heard it on the news there or seen it on our Facebook page. But last night at Marion City Council meeting, when the meeting was more or less over and we were on to items not on the agenda, Second Ward City Councilman Ayers Ratliff brought up the idea that the city of Marion should help out the people who have been affected by the loss of food card SNAP benefits. And he suggested that that number be $25,000 to be distributed to the administration, and they should distribute that, find a way to distribute that to the people in need in this community. And that vote was taken immediately last night, and that vote passed our Marion City Council unanimously. Unanimously. Not a single city council person voted against it. I have been in contact with Mayor Bill Collins this morning via email. They are working on a plan on how to distribute this money or how people can get access to it. He said as soon as he knows, he will let us know. So maybe we'll hear from Mayor Collins this morning. But I give complete credit last night to a lot of people. Ayers Ratliff for bringing it up, because had it not been brought up, it wouldn't have happened. Making the motion, and all of those city council members, for all that's happened over the last 2 years, got together last night. There was no partisanship. They all voted to do it, and they all voted on the spot. They didn't have to think about it. They voted on the spot, and there is no veto by the mayor or anything like that. He's working on a plan to get this money to people. $25,000. Whether you agree or disagree with the policy, you've got to say that for responsive government in times of need for people, and we certainly have seen that and heard that in the last week with the peanut butter jelly truck, it was something. And that motion and that passage last night was greeted with applause from the people in attendance for that council and that administration. And now we will go to phone calls. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Christian, how are you?
I am not bad. That's some very good news from council last night. You know, at the very fundamental level of everything, if we are to have a government that provides services, it should be for the ones who need it most in times that are most turbulent. So I think that's wonderful news from city council last night.
Well, it was an interesting moment, and the moment was interesting because it was not on the agenda. It was not something that needed a whole lot of paperwork to be drawn up. Council did not need a whole lot of time to think about it. And I'm trying to remember things from last night. Councilman Aaron Rollins immediately seconded this. He had no problem feeling this is what government should do. And Councilwoman Lang even suggested at one point, because the initial thought is to take the money out of the opioid treatment money, but she even suggested if we can't get it there, maybe we can get it another place. And that's exactly what happened last night. There was an addendum put on this motion that if they can't get it from the opioid money, that it will come right out of the general fund. So regardless of if the opioid money can be used this way, $25,000 is coming regardless.
Yeah, that's very good news, and I know that will quell the concerns for a lot of people in Marion. You know, this coupled with well, whatever is going to come from the governor and the state, you know, that's going to help a lot of people.
Well, you know what I was thinking last night? When you get right down to Governor DeWine's dollars and cents about what he wanted to do, I believe outside of his $7 million to the food banks, and I may have this number wrong, I hope I don't, but I think what was left was $18 million, and we weren't exactly sure how that was going to be distributed to 260-plus million people who lost their benefits in the state. And it looks as if the city of Marion, person to person, has outdone that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when in times of, you know, we've, especially in this term of council, it's been very turbulent. But, you know, the fact that when, you know, there's a problem, everyone's able to acknowledge, hey, that there's a problem and, you know, that they can, you know, do something about it, that's commendable.
Well, and I also think for all the wrapping that they have taken for the $10,000 party in the park this past summer, that council that voted to disperse that $10,000 with only one dissenting vote last night voted to disperse this $25,000 with no votes in the negative. So, you know, for all the wrapping they've taken about that, they're also willing to respond to the need of people who are in need of food benefits, more than double the party in the park. So you got to give them that.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was the big news last night. I guess the smaller news at this point, certainly not the headline after that happened last night, the mayor did get his economic development director position, the verbiage of it, approved. We don't know who it will be. We don't know how it exactly is going to happen yet with the county, but the job description has been approved. So if they are able to get the money for it, it will happen. What do you make of that? What's your read on that, Christian?
You know, from what I've been able to decipher, and I'm sure there are other people out there who have gone to far more council meetings than I have, that CanDo is not sustainable. And that they've had problems with it for Lord knows how long. But, you know, the position of an economic development director when the city is in, you know, troubled financial straits, when we are, is it 60,000 that both the city and the county will put together for 128,000 a year? I don't know. That sounds right. Or, you know, when you just got to factor in so much, is that the best use of the, you know, the city's money right now? I don't know. And, you know, especially considering, you know, yeah, a lot of the recent development in the last 2 years has been in downtown Marion, but, you know, what about the other parts of Marion that really need economic development? Like, think of, you know, parts of the west side. Think of, you know, north of Center Street, you know, North Main Street, like areas like that. Those areas really need economic development too. But, you know, we keep hammering on downtown, which is, I mean, it's great because we're, you know, we're starting to come up with a downtown that is, you know, more and more people want to come visit. I'm just thinking from a practicality standpoint, you know, it can't just be limited to the downtown. And I think when we are in as much financial trouble as we're in now, continuing to develop these new positions might not be the best idea. But I'm not the one who's in office, so.
Well, it's it did receive two negative votes last night. I believe Jason Schauber and Aaron Rollins voted against it. Aaron Rollins probably being the most vocal against it. So, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. I think there was a provision. Maybe there wasn't a provision put in that one. No, that was something else. But I guess we'll see if the county will fund it. If they will, it'll probably work. If they won't, it probably won't. But that's where we are with that. The other big conversation last night was bringing the commercial codes office, building codes office, to Marion. I'll tell you, that seemed to lose some traction last night. It went back to a first reading. The third vote did not happen because an amendment was put in there that this needed to be revisited after 1 year. Councilman Rollins put that in. And I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot of discussion or a whole lot of enthusiasm there last night for that. But that could change, I guess.
Now, didn't Marion used to have, but several years ago, building codes, and there was a movement a couple of years ago to walk all that back, and now is that what they're trying to do now? They're trying to bring back what they got rid of.
Well, I think there were residential codes, and that definitely made people unhappy. That did not go over very well. These would be commercial, as we have them, but I don't know. It sounds as if right now, even if it did pass, there is new verbiage put in there that this contract could be terminated after a year, which maybe will put people's mind at ease. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of, you know, just on a basic level of, you know, if you are a residential property owner or you own your own business and you want to do with that space what you would like, and there are codes that, you know, inhibit that, that's, you know, never going to be popular. But, you know, sometimes it might be warranted, especially, you know, if people can't properly upkeep their buildings and things like that. So
it's going to be
certainly interesting.
Well, I think the fight there basically is about if they go this route, people cannot use the state, and it is cheaper to use the state. So basically, is it better to have somebody who can work quicker, or is it better to have somebody who will work cheaper? And I think that's what this is all coming down to.
I think that's a good point, and I think there will also be more people who will come to council as this becomes closer to, you know, a vote, who will have more knowledge on building codes than I do.
Well, I'll tell you another interesting moment, a social moment did happen last night. As many of you know, 6th Ward City Councilman Ron Prater came under some fire last week when he posted a meme on his social media page in which he had a woman in a black burqa on his page. It said Playboy, November 2025. I believe it said New York City. He got a lot of blowback on this. He was called a racist, a misogynist. This was disgraceful, so on and so forth. People were asking that he be censured. Now, something interesting last night, for all that blowback he got last week, not a single person showed up last night to call for his censure. Not a single person came to the microphone to say that he was wrong. Nobody went on the record, but Mr. Prater himself spoke last night on it. He brought it up on his own accord at the end of the meeting and said he apologized, that he's not a racist, that people should not call him a racist or anything of that nature. And that's pretty much all that came of that. But all the people who were outraged, not a one of them showed up last night to say anything.
Well, you know, I think if he took it upon himself to apologize, that, you know, that should probably be the end of it. You know, people will rightfully so still remember this, and, you know, that part will not go away, you know, for anything that happens in the future. They're going to remember that this happened, but he, you know, took it upon himself to apologize. I don't agree with his statement that no one should call him a racist. I mean, yeah, I'm sure personally he's not, but you can't really post something like that and then expect people, you know, not to have opinions. But, I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's personally going after him as a racist. I think it's more the post that he made.
Well, here's the thing, Christian, and I want to come to you on this one, because I did have people who saw that last week who were asking me, Why? Because Mr. Prater posts a lot of political things. He posts a lot of political memes. Why was this the one that got people so upset? What was it about? Because it was pretty basic in and of its meme setup. I mean, a woman in a black burqa, Playboy, New York City.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of anti-Muslim, he was saying a lot about anti-woman. I don't think it was so much anti-woman as it was anti-Muslim. And I know, you know, some of your listeners might be like, you know, there's not a huge Muslim population in Marion, so why do you care? It's, you know, it's on the lines of basic decency. Like, I don't care if there's not much of a certain population in Marion. Just because of that, that doesn't give you a pass to, you know, be discriminatory against them. I think after the Mamdani victory in New York and the lead up to it, you know, sort of just you saw negative language against Muslims become more normalized. You know, comparisons to, like, I know Andrew Cuomo said, you know, could you imagine having this guy at the wheel on 9/11, which, you know, clearly insinuated something more. And so I think, you know, the point of the meme was a woman in a black burqa, New York Miss Playboy 2025, saying that, you know, because the new mayor of New York City is a Muslim, you know, instead of a woman who is, you know, not dressed, you know, a woman dressed in typical clothing, you know, won't be Miss New York, but because the new mayor's a Muslim, it'll be a woman dressed in traditional Muslim attire, which, you know, the implication there is that the new Muslim mayor is going to institute some sort of law that will force all women to, you know, dress conservatively, which, that just seems wrong on so many levels.
Well, it's interesting because I think memes are an interesting world we're getting into, because I think most people would say whoever created that meme was trying to be funny. That's what most memes' intention is.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Now, are they always funny? No. And obviously this one got Mr. Prater in trouble. But, I mean, we even see memes on the local level. Now, are they offensive? Are they funny? I mean, I don't know. It's a meme. I don't know. What's offensive and what's not offensive?
I feel like there's a line. I mean, if something's blatantly, like, you know, even though I am a very, very staunch Democrat, I will see memes about Democrats all the time. They're not offensive, but they are, you know. I saw one about the Democratic leadership and the shutdown and, you know, so something about surrendering, and I thought, okay, that, you know, that made me chuckle a little bit because it seems like it's timely. But, you know, things that, you know, and, you know, Councilman Prater and, you know, everyone else can talk about political correctness and wokeness and whatever that means. But that doesn't really change the point that there's just, you know, some things that, you know, even if you don't agree with the fact that you shouldn't joke about them, you just probably shouldn't joke about them. And then this whole situation would be, you know, averted. And, you know, I think that's national. When people make memes locally, it's one, you know, you've got to have some really niche, because very, very few people are going to have any idea what you're talking about if you're making a meme about politicians in Marion, Ohio. And, you know, do you really have, you know, you've certainly got to have something better to do because of the fact that not many people will understand them. But that's just me.
Well, I guess we'll see where that all ends up. I think those were really the points last night that were made in the city council meeting. There was a little talk of Jason Schaber's emails not being answered. That was brought up last night. But it really didn't go anywhere. I mean, nobody had anything to say about it on council, and the administration didn't have anything to say about it. So that kind of went where it went, just kind of went away. That's where that was. So I guess right now everything turns to the national level, because obviously the eight Democrats have crossed over. They've made a deal in the Senate to open back up the government. We still don't know exactly when that will happen. Congress does have to meet and finish this off. It looks most likely as if they will. But what happened? What happened with the Democrats is I heard a lot of people say last night when I got home, I was watching a little bit of news, that they got no assurance at all on extending the Obamacare subsidies, and that the federal government is required by law to pay back pay to all the people who have been laid off. So saying that that was a concession is really nothing, because it was supposed to happen anyway. So what did the Democrats get here, and why did they settle this?
Well, I think, you know, a big reason that sort of not discussed that this was settled is because it's really starting to negatively impact air travel. And, you know, when air travel, you know, when you mess with people's air travel, especially those who are traveling, you know, all the time for work, you could even throw members of Congress into that one, because they're certainly traveling all the time for work. All the, you know, air traffic control shutdown, you know, it's just not a good... It has a, you know, it trickles down, you know, it hits every level of our economy when, you know, you can't, when, you know, there's stuff wrong with our airports. But, yeah, I mean, I think you kind of nailed the points about, you know, the Democrats, they were told that they're going to get a vote on extending Obamacare subsidies. But, you know, is there a guarantee that that vote would happen? You know, I saw that Speaker Johnson in the press conference last week didn't, you know, he basically, you know, a reporter asked him that same question, and he sort of declined to answer it. So, you know, I'm just curious why, you know, if Democrats feel that they can make deals with these people and they, you know, can get what they want, then that's fine. But the Democrats were in a... great place of leverage. You know, I think most of the country, you know, were on the Democrat side with the shutdown. So I sort of question the decision making there. But on the other hand, you know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving. Back on the topic of air travel, I mean, there would be heads rolling if people, because I just think of my friends here at Miami, you know. I have a friend from California. I have a friend from Kansas. I have a friend from Massachusetts. You know, they all have to take a plane to get home for Thanksgiving, and, you know, they wouldn't be able to get home. I've got a friend who went to some conference in New York City for the weekend. He's still there because the flight to Cincinnati, you know, hasn't, you know, has kept getting delayed. So, you know, I think is more, you know, if this is not impacting everybody yet, as soon as you, you know, hamper everybody's travel plans, then you're really going to get people upset. And, you know, why the Democrats chose now, I don't know. I know they wanted to wait until after the first of the month. But, you know, at this point, if you've really dug in this much and you really haven't been able to get anything of it, and you're just waving the white flag, I think that's why so many people continue to show disdain for the Democratic Party.
Well, I know there's an article in the USA Today that said that the Democrats have missed the moment. And yes, the elections last week showed that people wanted an opposition party. People turned out in record numbers, elected Democrats last week. Even Vivek Ramaswamy here in Ohio said the Republicans got their rear ends handed to them. And yet it was the Democrats who... I'm still not exactly sure what they got in this deal. And a lot of people are questioning whether Schumer can keep his caucus together and should be in this position, because they feel they didn't meet the moment. And that's the article in the USA Today today.
So, I think Schumer's in an interesting place, because obviously he voted no on the deal. But I think any leader that is letting eight members of their caucus dictate policy for everybody has a significant problem. And I know that some Democratic Senate candidates next or this coming cycle have said that they don't want him to stay on as leader, and I think that's a conversation that needs to be had by the Democrats actually in the Senate. I know, you know, he's been there since 2016. The Democrats, yeah, we, you know, had the Senate for we've had the Senate for 2 years in that time. No, we've had the Senate for 4 years in that time. So I don't know, that's really up, you know, that's up to them. But especially if the Republicans get rid of the filibuster, after, you know, that'd be blatant hypocrisy. They were fighting against it for the entire time Biden was president. And really, if Schumer wanted to get that through, I don't, you know, he could have strong-armed the caucus. That didn't happen. If he really didn't want this to happen, I'm sure he could have strong-armed the caucus. But I think it's important to look at, you know, I'm sure that, you know, no one knows the names of these senators, but I'm looking at a list of them, and I count, you know, at least half of them are not going to run for re-election again. And then, you know, the other half of them just, I think, maybe of just one re-election. So it's, you know, all senators who don't have to worry about going back to their, you know, maybe except for John Fetterman, the senators who don't have to go back to their constituents and sort of worry what they think. So it just reflects really poorly on the Democratic Party that, you know, even though, you know, we have 47 senators, we had 39 of them that, you know, opposed this. You know, those eight are writing policy for, you know, everyone else. So, and that's how the Senate works, but you know, I feel like the Democrats, at the very least, could have been more forceful against this.
So here we go, and I guess we'll see what happens. And then on January 30th, what happens? I mean, are all these people who said that they're going to give the Republicans a fair shake and they're going to negotiate health care the second week of December when they take this vote, and they are going to get this government back open? If no concessions are made and January 30th comes around, then what?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know why, and you know, this is one of the basic problems with partisanship, because, you know, because the two sides don't trust each other at all when they negotiate. Because, you know, the Democrats feel that the Republicans are only doing what Trump wants, then, you know, the Republicans just don't trust the motives of the Democrats. So I think, you know, it's very concerning that the main concession was, we're going to get to negotiate. I mean, negotiations, especially in this Congress, have fallen through all the time. So I don't know why this is any different. I mean, if the Democrats know something, if those eight Democrats know something that the rest of us don't, then good for them. And I'm still willing to, obviously, we should give them the benefit of the doubt on that until, you know, something else happens. But I don't know. It's just, it doesn't make the Democrats look good. And it has killed, I think, all of the momentum that we got last Tuesday.
Well, and is that going to...
That's really something that, you know, it's, you know, 11 months in the making, these election results, and they're out of the paper by, you know, the end of the week. Well, but, you know, that's only something the Democrats could do.
Well, and that's a big question now, because last week the news was Amy Acton riding high. Her polls were going up. Vivek Ramaswamy releasing his statement that the Republicans got their rear end handed to them last week. A lot of people felt that the Democrats were on a high. Even here locally, the highest vote-getting Republican only got 21 more votes than the highest vote-getting Democrat. The Charter City failed by more than 10%, and now people are starting to wonder, well, now are people going to trust these Democrats? Are they going to trust Amy Acton? Is all that momentum that was coming off last week gone?
I think the fact that Amy Acton, and, you know, you had Brian Hambly on the other day, and Allison Russo, and all the other statewide candidates have something different going from them, and that they are not part of the Federal Democratic Party. You know, obviously, if you go to people, they think Democrats in Congress need the most direction, whereas, you know, Amy Acton and, you know, other statewide Democrats, they can just continue to run the campaign they've been running and the messaging they've been running, where they, you know, don't agree with everything the National Democratic Party does. And this is a perfect opportunity, especially in a state where the National Democratic Party is not popular to begin with, to, you know, unequivocally distance yourself from them. Because, you know, you're not going to get any flack from establishment Democrats either, because I'm sure they all disagree with this. So, you know, I think it's a rare opportunity that a statewide Democratic candidate in Ohio has to distance themselves from the national party without catching flack from the base.
Well, and I guess coming back to the local level here again, in last night's vote, $25,000 to the administration to help with people who are suffering because of the loss of SNAP benefits. Is this good for everybody in Marion, good for every politician in Marion? Because it is a council with only one Democrat, the Democrat was the one who brought up the idea last night and sort of structured the idea, although we don't have any meat in the idea yet because the mayor, you got to be fair to the mayor, he just found out about this last night, trying to figure out how to disperse this. So is this good for everybody, or is this going to make people mad? Why is city government spending this money?
I mean, that's something that I was admittedly cross my mind. I think if you're being, you know, if your disagreements with council come from a financial point of view, and, you know, here they are spending another $25,000 as we're just talking about them, you know, authorizing a lot more money for the economic development position, you obviously have to be consistent. But if this, you know, if this money was already existing, then, you know, I certainly understand the logic, and I think people understand. You know, I think there's a difference between, you know, you're electing to spend this money on a new position rather than, you know, this is money that people were expecting in a sort, you know, it's an emergency, you know, and they need, you know, this money to just put food on the table compared to an economic development position. I think that's the difference. I mean, I would certainly hope that it just transcends politics because, you know, human suffering really, you know, even though we've unfortunately seen different things nationally, you know, human suffering should not, you know, be a political thing. And I'm glad that Marion, of all places, the council showed last night, you know, that, you know, human suffering, at least on this issue, is not partisan.
Well, I guess we'll see what the details are of this when they come out, and we hope to get those soon. But I guess the final question on this whole thing is, Ayers Ratliff was the one second ward city councilman who brought this up. He's got less than 2 months left in office. He certainly has had a tumultuous 2 years, been in the news for a whole lot of other things in the last 2 years. Does this help him in any way?
I think, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people, and I think this is a great example, you know, when someone asks why you're a Democrat, and I think Councilman Ratliff, you know, did a great job of showing that last night. You know, like, I'm a Democrat because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, the most vulnerable in our society are able to, you know, get a fair shake, that they're able to, you know, have a helping hand to, you know, get them out of their troublesome times. So, you know, I think, yes, it certainly reflects well on him, and I'm sure, you know, he's glad to have his name in the news for, you know, something that isn't what it has been. So, but, you know, that's obviously not why he did it. I mean, he's wouldn't do that for political reasons. But I don't know. I think that just didn't just reflect well on him, but it reflected well on, you know, every member of council last night. But I mean, you raise a good point. You know, after January 1st, there's no more Ayers Ratliff. There's no more Jason Schauber on council. Yes, we'll have Scott Kreider. But you know, Councilman Ratliff and Councilman Schauber, those are the ones who have had the most, you know, intimate experience with what, you know, this council and this administration have been doing to date. You know, they are obviously the ones who have been asking the hard questions. You know, and I don't know, it was some Republican on council, it might have been Councilman Rollins, you know, total power corrupts absolutely. And I hope that's not what happens, but, you know, as the council loses more dissenting voices, I fear, you know, the risk of that is accentuated.
It certainly is something to keep an eye and an ear on. Well, Christian, I thank you for calling in. If as long as you're listening this morning, if anything catches your ear, feel free to call back in.
All right, I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christian. Bye-bye. Christian Pearson, listening from Southern Ohio as he is away at college. But that's the big news from last night's council meeting. Does anybody have anything to say in regard to that? We've got about 10 minutes left in this hour. And we've got next hour, 740-383-9944. Well, the phone is already ringing. Go ahead, caller.
Love your city.
Oh, yes.
You know, I think Christian needs the nickname of You Know Kid.
Well, there you go.
You know? Oh, this cartoon with the burka and the Playboy, Playmate, etc., you know, these gutless...
Oh, you just did you know you too. You did you know.
But I didn't consistently say that, you know.
We don't know. Time might tell.
But if we, you know what I'm saying? So if we know, you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. At any rate, the cartoon of the burkas in that for the Playmate of November... What a bunch of gutless, spineless people to take offense at a cartoon. That's absurd. Go back and look at the history of political cartooning. I'm curious what these gutless wonders think about the fact that Mondami has appointed 5 women in burkas to be key people of his administration. As one comedian said, how on earth will anything ever get done in the city of New York City? Because aren't Muslims called to prayer 7 times a day? How can you get anything done?
Well, I'm sure these aren't the first people in New York who are of Muslim heritage. I mean, there are many mosques in New York. I guess the difference here, I guess we're talking about two separate...
Let's talk about Marion and the gutless, spineless people who wanted to throw stones at Ron Prater for just passing on a political cartoon.
Well, I think... Listen, here's the understanding of that I got about this, was that I don't... Okay, yes, there have been political cartoons over the years, but I don't know if a meme is a political cartoon anymore, because I don't know... I don't know if that would have ran in a newspaper.
Cutesy, all these cutesy internet... Oh, it's a meme. Oh, it's a cannabis gob. Oh, my God, it's a cannabis knob. What are we going to do? All this crap. Let's speak English. We've gotten so bloody far away from speaking English and all of this other stuff, so it's a meme. It's a goddamn cartoon, for Christ's sake.
Okay, but I guess that whatever you want to call it, I guess my point is that I don't think that could have run in any newspaper in the country. So to compare it to a cartoon that would have... What's that?
So what, that it couldn't run in any...
Well, I think that's the difference.
In the United States.
But I think why it would not have run in any newspaper...
Do you think that the cartoon that Larry Flint put of... what was that? What the hell was the guy's name? That religious leader swinging on the outhouse door. Do you think that would get published in a newspaper?
Well, I don't think...
No, it wouldn't. There are certain places...
What newspaper was that published in?
There are certain places where political cartoons work better. Would a newspaper put that in? Hell no. The Marion Star didn't put my letter to the editor in until the last possible Sunday before the election about the Charter Commission.
Well, I guess here's the question that came up last night. How can somebody tell somebody else what is wrong and what they are sensitive about. Prater obviously felt that he was wrong in this one. He did apologize. He did say he was sorry if he offended anybody. So on some level, and he took it down, he must have, on some level, have felt he was wrong.
No, he felt the pressure of a bunch of spineless, gutless people that didn't even show up last night to admonish him. This is ridiculous. People have to draw a line between the public person and the private person.
Well, I think that's hard now when we have social media.
Well, it's difficult when you have a bunch of people who really don't have the mental capacity to differentiate.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll tell you what. Listen, everybody's getting a little tired. If it were just newspapers that were publishing these things, that's one thing. You cannot buy the newspaper. You can show your anger that way. But everybody's excuse now when they get caught in something that is considered racist or misogynist or just in bad taste, they always go to, well, I was just kidding. It was just a joke. I was just kidding.
You know, that's the problem these days. Ever since 9/11, America has lost its sense of humor.
Well, I don't know. I just think people aren't that funny. I mean, I think they think they're funny, but you know what?
Think about this. Do you think Don Rickles would be able to continue his career if he were still alive today?
I think if he was doing the same material he had done his entire career, I think he would.
Yeah, but he made fun of everybody.
He did, and I think people understood that was his shtick, and that's what he did, and that was not... See, but that's it. That's comedy. And Don Rickles knew that was comedy, and everybody knew you were going to see a comedy show. A guy sitting behind a computer in Nebraska is not a comedian, and that's the problem.
What about the people that sit behind a computer in Timbuktu that their comics are syndicated?
Well, if their comics are syndicated, then I guess they are professional.
What?
I said if they're hired by somebody for their work and what they do, then that would be certainly a professional level, more than somebody who's just pumping these things out.
What's that got to do with controversial subject matter? You know, you had the guy, Gary Adams, what he said, and oh my God, people will stop, they'll stop subscribing to our rag paper because he said something that offended a bunch of people, so hey, we're going to 86 him, you know?
Well, but I mean, I guess I don't understand the difference here, because there have been many people who have said things that at the time I think they thought were not going to be as bad as they were, and then the backlash came. And it wasn't good. I mean, did we not just have this conversation about Charlie Kirk not too long ago, Jimmy Kimmel? I mean, I think you were one of the people who called in who said what Jimmy Kimmel said was awful. I don't think he thought...
And then especially in light of Jimmy Kimmel being on his wife's podcast, and she... Oh, it's disgusting.
Well, see, now there you go. Now, why can't people think that this meme was disgusting?
A meme is a caricature. It's a cartoon. It's like Mickey Mouse. What would you think if you saw Mickey Mouse having sex with a sheep?
I don't know what I would think.
Well, it probably represents some of the Muslim people. So Mickey Mouse is now a Muslim.
Right, but I guess the point being made by these people, and I certainly was not leading the group, but it was that a sitting councilman would share that. And I think that was the comment being made in the Jimmy Kimmel situation, that somebody on late-night television on a network...
Let's go back to Ron Prater. You know, the simple fact of the matter were, there were essentially anonymous people dragging him over the concrete about this, but yet they didn't have the intestinal fortitude or the backbone to come and address it in a public forum.
Well, that I don't understand. That you have to talk to them about. I don't get that.
Well, it's as idiotic as them being offended by something that really probably didn't have anything to do with them. They just didn't care for it, and they thought, oh, wow, this is controversial. Look at my, oh, look at this. Don't you find this offensive, you know? Well, let's move on to love your city. You're at 9 o'clock here. Can I call back in?
Yep, we'll be back on the other side.
An economic development position.
Yep, and anybody else as well. We'll be back here in about 15 minutes.
Thank you.
Ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. There's a,